We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This hour is brought to you by the 2023 BMW Championship at Olympia Fields.
The talent that's here and the talent that is continuing to develop here. You obviously have some mainstay guys like Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, Cubs all-star outfielder.
That was a nice at-bat, especially to go deep on a day like today with how the wind's going and such a good pitcher on the mound. Really solid at-bat there.
Gold Glove Award winner.
On the run, Ian Happ dives, makes a sensational catch.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
Strummed comes out, and he just dices. 105 pitches, he's going sinker away. He's backdooring it. He's throwing the slider to the corner. Then he's running the sinker in. He's got a splitter now. I don't know when he found that pitch. He's all over the place. It's unbelievable.
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Here's a man that probably has five fresh pots a day. He's got an insatiable thirst for coffee.
Ian Happ with Bernstein and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Let's talk some baseball with Ian Happ. He's on Twitter at ihap_1. The all-star outfielder and gold glover is with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. So, Rossi getting a little hot last night. A previous segment, we were playing Ron Coomer's comments, and it was I get it. That was pretty rough stuff from an umpire, especially with Hendricks out there painting the way he does.
Yeah, just a tough start for us. You know, Snell's definitely a guy that can be around the strike zone, and so you know, if guys are being disciplined, you want to reward them for that kind of big spot there in the first two, where we have a couple guys on base, and say it has two out of three pitches out of the strike zone, and then next inning, a couple more. You want Hendricks to get those calls if the other guy's getting those calls. So, a good spot to get frustrated, and it was a little bit better the rest of the day. But yeah, that's just a tough start to the game to end, to kind of put us on that foot.
Ian, how many pitches, or does it take multiple at bats for you to get used to what an umpire's strike zone is for that particular game?
Kind of depends on the guy. I think, sometimes there's a consistency and inconsistency. Sometimes it's, you're guessing, but it's hard to adjust. I think maybe people would say, you know what his zone is, so you got to swing at that pitch. Been doing this for a long time. It's really hard to say I'm going to commit to swinging at a pitch that I know is not a strike, because your body shuts you down, your eyes shut you down. You know, it's what you've trained your whole life to do, is to swing at the ones in the zone, to not swing at the ones out of the zone. So it's kind of hard to convince yourself to do the opposite of what you really want to do.
You said something last week about a pitch where it was something to the effect of, I see that spot very well. That you really, I forgot which part of the zone you were talking about, but it sounded like that you know that there's a particular part of your zone that you see extremely well.
Yeah. I mean, I see left-handed, I see the outer corner very, very well. I see up pretty well. And I got a good feel for the bottom. The inner line is the one that, you know, sometimes I'll think the pitch is a ball and it was actually a strike. I think the one that's in left-handed is the one that I don't argue as much, because I know it's not my best spot. But definitely the outside corner is the one that if I think it's a ball, I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Ian, this is like the strangest type of wraparound series that you can have, because not only is it you're going all the way, you know, you're jumping a couple of time zones, but then it's day game on Sunday all the way to night game on Monday. How, you guys must have felt like you were in San Diego for a month.
Yeah, I think we were there for I was going to start paying rent in the hotel, but then they said we're going to leave now. but we got in Wednesday night, had the off day Thursday. So we were there, you know, all Thursday, Friday, 6 o'clock or 6:10, whatever it was. Then we ended up playing a 7:05 on Saturday to a day game Sunday, to a night game Monday. Just a crazy, crazy series. You know, felt like we were there forever. I think that's kind of part of this new schedule, figuring out how to make it all work. You know, we're in Anaheim now, and then we'll go up to San Fran. It's kind of our last West Coast swing. You know, we've knocked two out already, so it's interesting. But I was actually talking to a couple guys who were like, I don't know, played a wraparound for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. So, you know, it's a new thing for a lot of guys.
As somebody to whom routine is extremely important, do you have a West Coast travel routine down now? Are there things you do to adjust to travel and time change?
Yeah, I try to. It's nice to have that off day when you get in. That first day we were here, I, you know, woke up at 6:30 and couldn't go back to bed. So nice to have that off day to acclimate a little bit. I try to like force myself to stay in bed on the first day or two until pretty late, just to get onto the time zone and not still be up and moving and think that it's normal to be up at 6:30. And then I'll try to, one of the first couple nights, I'll just try to stay up a little bit later, because it's so easy to fall asleep, but you know, just be exhausted and fall asleep at 10 o'clock, and then you know, you're waking up early again. So I try to kind of keep myself in bed for a while and then stay up a little bit later to try to push myself onto that time zone.
Is that something that you guys talk about individually? Like how, like what worked for you, or how do you go about these trips?
Yeah, I think everybody has a little different process of what they do. And guys, you know, if guys have family, there's a lot of West Coast trips where families will come out because they're good cities. And, you know, if they have kids and the kids are up early running around, it's different. You know, for me, you know, I get to just not have to worry about that. I get to just focus on making sure that I feel good. So it's different for everybody. But yeah, it's definitely something that guys will talk about, especially the first couple of days, trying to figure out, you know, if guys are tired or if they need to do something a little bit different.
I really underrated the absence of Cody Bellinger. I realized that it's mattered a lot, and it feels like it matters. It you guys were clearly aware of him, as much as you support your teammates and people always say next man up. You know, the not having him has hurt the Cubs. It really has.
He's a great player, having a fantastic year. I think the stability he gives you with left-handed bat in the middle of the lineup, you know, he does a really good job of hitting both righties and lefties well. And I think for us, you know, he was hitting a bunch of homers off lefties at that time, so there was no consideration of getting him out of the lineup against the left-handed hitter. He provided that stability, plus playing great center field defense. So, you know, having that length of the lineup, and you know, I think we've hit left-handed pitching well pretty consistently most of the year. I think numbers against righties are probably not quite as good, so it's, you know, about a little bit of balance where that lefty back can really help lengthen you out. But we're excited for him to get back. He's been moving around better, doing stuff on the field, and I don't think he's too far away now.
It seems like every week that we talk, I have to ask you a question about Marcus Stroman, the National League Player of the Week. This week, he continued his dominance. And that's what I think is kind of interesting. I was talking about this with Zach Zaidman yesterday, that Stro has always been good. Like, he's always been good. This year, it looks like he's taken like another step where he's dominating the lineups that he's going up against. So what are you seeing as his left fielder and teammate?
I mean, yeah, definitely. He's never lacked confidence. He's always been a guy that goes out there with a presence. I think he had a couple tough starts at the beginning of last year and was just kind of clawing back from that and got himself into a spot where he had a good season last year, but was in a little bit of a hole to start. And I think this year, took a lot of that stuff that he did so well last two-thirds, three-quarters of the year last year, just from the jump. You know, he talked about years ago that when he threw the WBC for Team USA, that it really locked him in. And he had one of the best years of his career, maybe going to play WBC and getting that experience up front kind of, put him in that mental space. But, he's been nothing but lights out, goes about his business in a really impressive way. He's got his routine. He takes care of his body. He's around his teammates, hangs out, talks to young guys, talks to the bullpen. There's just a lot of things about the way he carries himself that are super impressive and a really awesome guy to watch go to work every fifth day.
We spent the first hour of our show talking about the news that broke right during our pre-show meeting. How did you respond when you heard the blockbuster news about the merger of the PGA with LIV Golf?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I didn't wake up very long ago. And I saw that and I haven't really processed yet. First, I thought it was fake. And now I'm wondering about all of the details because that is very interesting. I saw some of the stuff maybe some of the players didn't know, or not that many people knew that it was even going to happen, which is shocking. So, I have not yet processed, but it'll be really interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I'm really unhappy about it. And I know that the PGA has never been some great bastion of moral behavior in general, but I just feel terrible for Rory and those guys who did take a stand in the name of the PGA. They took enforced something that they thought was good and right. And Jay Monahan's just like, yeah, no, they cut us a check. I feel bad for those guys.
Yeah, I think, when more details come out, maybe it'll make more sense. But right now, for all the guys that had, held strong and made such strong stances on it, I can't imagine what the conversation's like. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how it shakes out and what the details are of the actual agreement and how eventually how they actually do merge and start to play events together. Cause it seems like the LIV, from what I read, it seems like the LIV schedule goes on and PGA Tour schedule goes on. And then what happens at the end of the year, next year.
As a union guy, do you look at what goes on with them and be like, man, how in the world would you wrangle all of the golfers to have a stance anyway, considering that they're all basically their own businesses?
Yeah. I mean, their own businesses is for sure different. I think, all of those guys, their system's different, right? Like they play and they get compensated by, or in the past, they would get compensated by just, performance. There was nothing guaranteed. I think we probably have more bodies to find and to actually wrangle than golf does, but it's a very different structure than what we're trying to do. So it's a fast. I've talked to some of the guys about the way theirs is run and kind of how their pension works and everything. And it's a really interesting, every sport is different. So it's a really interesting dynamic.
It looks like, or at least with the schedule, that you guys are going to miss Ohtani on the mound, but obviously he'll be in the lineup because, he's one of the best hitters in the world. As someone who's doing the offensive and defensive stuff at such a high level, what's your appreciation for him being able to do that while also being a really good pitcher?
I mean, it's incredible. You see the highlights, the athlete that he is. I think, his ability to do what he does on the mound as consistently as he does it And then go out there and hit home runs. And I think one of the most impressive things is how he gets down the line. Like, he flies down the line. It's just, you know, he's the complete package. He's an incredible athlete. I always enjoy watching Mike Trout take his at bats. You know, I haven't played much against Shohei, but it'll be fun to compete and see it in person.
And as your quest for Dinger Dollars rolls on, what is happening in the Connect Roasters empire and beyond?
We are getting close on the coffee shop. That is getting there. It gets more and more real every day, which is cool. And the big news is we just switched the bag design. We have been working on this for months, and we had to kind of get the old stock out. But, you know, the old bags that we had that we prefer have a flat bottom. They have a zipper kind of pouch, you know, so you can reseal it. They're resealable, which we love. You know, the old bags that we used, you had to kind of cut the top off and fold it back down. And we thought, you know what, let's get the really nice zip bag so people can keep their coffee fresh. We like them a lot more. So all those bags are going to be shipped out now. Big news. New bags.
Wow. There it is. We asked for big news. We got it. Ian Happ, good luck. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
It's Ian Happ of the Chicago Cubs. His former manager is making some choices. Mm-hmm. And I don't quite get it.
I mean, I get it.
Do you?
Yes.
You think it was always in there?
Yes. I think it's in there.
We need to hear from Joe Maddon, because he is he's embracing a role that I guess is a little
surprising.
It's unfortunate is what it is. Mm-hmm. It's too bad. It's too bad. But you'll hear from Joe Maddon next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Here's the 2-2. Call strike three. Got him with a fastball, 92 miles per hour. And Stroman came off the mound looking a little awkward after that delivery. Is he okay?
I think so. I don't know if that was an awkward land or just a dance move. I'm not quite sure. Good breaking ball right on the inside corner. And I think it was more of a little dance move after the strikeout.
Yeah, I thought he was making fun of the Soto shuffle, right? So, hey, here's your shuffle. What the hell, man? That's fun. If Soto's going to do it and do his whole little thing when he takes a pitch, you get him and he's going to throw it right back at him.
That's right. Have a little bit of fun, because the game's supposed to be fun.
So why are you playing that highlight? Well, in a weird way.
Well, first, to congratulate Marcus Stroman on being National League Player of the Week.
Correct.
There you go.
Congratulations. He's Player of the Week. But also, Marcus Stroman's name came up somewhat oddly when...
Caught astray.
He indeed did. Because Joe Maddon was asked about what we mentioned yesterday, Marcell Ozuna's 415-foot shot that hit the top of the wall and ended up being a single, and Brian Snitker pulled him out. So Joe Maddon was asked about that.
Brutal. It was brutal, man. I mean, I don't want any kid to see this happen. I don't want any kid watching this game in the United States, in Japan, Dominican Republic. I don't want anybody watching this. I mean, this is what we have to subtract from our game. We're accepting this kind of behavior. The grownups cannot accept this kind of behavior. I saw Stroman do his little slide to the left after he struck out Soto. We're accepting all kinds of behavior that we should not. And to me, it's cutting into the fabric of respect of our game, quite frankly. Whether you like that or not, if we have to advertise our game based on physical demonstrations after achievement, that's a bad way to promote our game.
Woof. That is via MLB Now. Slide to the left.
I said the same thing to Ray in real time.
Crisscross. Everybody clap your hand. Hello, King Yo. Hey!
Come on, go down Joe. Low. Come on, Joe. All the way to the floor. He's going full baseball police on us?
Yes.
Hardcore sirens blaring Bud Norris baseball police.
Well, okay. Let's.
He has joined the cops.
Well, let's remember that Joe Madden's foundation is called Respect 90. Like they had the Respect 90 t-shirts. Like that became a big seller.
I get that. That's hustle. That's different. That's hustle is different. Marcelo Zuna, different. Tim Anderson, different. Hustle is different.
I agree with you. But I think that's where a lot of this comes from with Joe. I also think that you're seeing the trappings of authoritarianism. Where when Joe talks about the way that a clubhouse should be and who should be in charge of a clubhouse, he should be in charge of a clubhouse. He should set the agenda. And I understand that. He's a World Series winning manager. And before that, he was very successful in what it is that he does. It does seem like, and maybe Joe bristled at this at the time, although I don't remember that being the case. Joe's vibe was a little less authoritarian, a little bit more free love when he was managing the Cubs and the Rays. Until the end with him and the Cubs.
Yeah, I thought it was hippie Joe, man.
That's what I mean. Like but there was always, it's always been in, I'm right, has always been in there.
The grown-ups? I mean, the language he's using now.
Yes.
It's the grown-ups in celebration of achievement, not celebration after achievement.
It's a little dog whistling.
Way more so than ever. It's getting weird.
I think that there are those that when they have been in charge and who else had the whole hippie vibe until they got older and then started saying stuff that felt very dog whistly and authoritarianist? Phil Jackson.
Yeah. People are also going to talk about Fed Chairman Jerome Powell at the Dead & Company show. Did you see all that?
I did.
Did you know that? Bring it into Sutton.
Maddie.
It's sort of the same thing where people, and there were great tweets about it. I mean, I think Calcaterra mentioned it too, that, yeah, of course, that people are, you know, they just age into and away from certain things and it all becomes hypocrisy. We're back to the underlying hypocrisy again, right?
Yeah. I mean, wasn't Paul Ryan's favorite band Rage Against the Machine?
Tom Morello's like, against what do you think we're raging?
You're the machine, sir. You
the machine.
That's my favorite ongoing bit on the internet. People figuring out that Rage Against the Machine is political. Like, listen
it's
to the
Tom
lyrics.
Tom Morello! Right, and then he clapped back at somebody, and he was pointing out some tweet that he got. And Morello's like, one doesn't have to have an honors degree in political science from Harvard to point this out. However,
I happen to have
He just said, however, .. Tom Morello has an honors degree in political science from Harvard University. It's just hysterical to me, some of this stuff. Where did you Rage Against the Machine? Come on, man.
I liked Rage Against the Machine when they weren't political.
Oh, really now?
Which
you?
Was that?
Yeah. What bulls on parade? Did you think they were actually talking about bulls on parade? I mean, come on.
Morello told a story. He does a show called his One Man Revolution on Sirius. And he was telling a story. I forget what. Maybe it was Mexico. And Rage was getting ready to do a show. And they were basically told, hey, man, don't be mentioning the gorillas. Don't be mentioning, like, we don't, you going, and they were like, oh, yeah, we're not gonna do that. And he said they opened up the show and brought the leader of the gorilla movement onto the stage.
Of course he did.
Because they're Rage Against the Machine. I think
it's like asking Jim Morrison, can you just sing Girl We Couldn't Get Much Happier? Yeah.
Sure. I'll write on that.
Yep. I got you.
Wait, hold on. Wait, you want me to go with happier? Let me write that down.
Or when the head of the studio told Mel Brooks and gave the notes on Blazing Saddles, right?
And he's get right on it.
Yeah. No, take out the farting in that scene. All right, no farting. Absolutely, for sure. And he walks out of the room. Yep. Got it? Done. Of course, done. Because he said they never remember what they say anyway.
I think that Joe is suffering from old black man's disease.
Okay, what does this mean? Is it like Uncle Ruckus?
That sometimes you talk to the older black dudes about what's happening
these
in
kids
the community.
Today,
yeah,
pull like, your pants up.
Yeah, I worry about that for myself. When I get old, and I saw a young man, like, pull your pants. Like in my mind, I was like, pull your pants. Like, yeah, he can wear his pants low if he wants. I do think that he's going to need hip replacement later, but you know, that's on him. That's a choice that he's making. But there's definitely, as Joe is been spurned by the game, he's getting older and he's being given platforms to talk about some of this stuff. That he's talking about it in a way that is not unfamiliar to many when you're talking about grandpas and uncles, where maybe the way that they used to talk about things felt a little bit different. Now it feels kind of like, wait a minute, this feels like it's got some stuff added to it.
The 815 texter says Joe Madden has slid past Phil and is on his way to going full Ditka. You never go full Ditka. Here's the thing.
I think Phil's closer to Ditka.
I think Phil is, but Ditka never changed. Ditka's always been that.
Yes.
That he's at least that's the guy he's always been.
And see the thing with Joe is that there's so many things that are like inside the column of good for him, where you look at what was happening in his hometown and how he was a bridge between the immigrant community of Italians and Irish that he grew up with, and the immigrants that were coming from Spanish speaking countries.
Dominican Republic,
Mexico, like all of this stuff.
And yet he's friends with Lou Barletta.
Right. This is what I mean.
And he's always been friends with Lou Barletta.
This is what I mean, where you see him in some of the moments where he clearly understands, like where he is someone that's like, everyone needs to be together. But I think it's one of, I mean, can we get bigger into this? Do you mind? I think it's one of the problems with white liberalism, where oftentimes there are people who are well-intended in what it is they're trying to do, but they always center themselves as the leader of it, where, yes, we should all be working towards these things that make us closer together. I'll lead it. This is the way that it should be done. Well, hold on there.
Or you could listen.
Hold on.
To the people you're trying to bring together.
Right. Nope. Don't need to do that. I've done all of the research on it, and now I'm going to lead you and bring you together. Okay.
Well, that's the savior idea. That's sure. That's the idea of sort of trafficking in the wanting good to be seen as some sort of hero that swoops in.
I'm okay with people having a savior complex if they actually are out there saving people.
If people actually get help,
The problem is not just being the savior, but being the person that, no, you don't understand. Well, what is it that I don't understand, savior? Well, you know, about those people. What people are those? Yo people? Your auntie and your uncle that be out here doing stuff to people? Those people? Yeah. So, you know, I think there is a lot that's going on with Joe. I think he's angry. I think he's angry at the game.
Bitter.
Bitter is a great word.
I think he's bitter.
And I think that he thinks that there's a better way to do things. And he, if given the opportunity, he could show you the better way to do it. Him clapping at Strowman to me is bizarre.
Yeah. He had that loaded, ready to go.
Yeah.
He couldn't wait. He couldn't wait to drag Strowman.
Right.
For what?
And my whole thing was that there was enough on the Ozuna stuff that you could just spend your time talking about that.
This is from Scott in Oak Park. Sure, Rage Against the Machine wouldn't bring a Sandinista on stage. Zach De La Rocha's dad was a member of the Sandinistas. And also, what year did Don Henley write Boys of Summer?
I don't know.
Because when all of that outrage over Jerome Powell being at the Dead and Company show, and there were other people spotted, like some Fox News, somebody was spotted there, like, oh, what are they doing here? Wasn't it in Boys of Summer where he made the point, out on the road today, I saw a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac, pointing out like how far people have come straying away from what they thought their ideals were, back when a Cadillac sort of represented mainstream, high class.
One of our former program directors said to me a long time ago, and it's always stuck with me, because I do
and
think
Don Henley's a penis too, by the way.
I do think there is a kernel of truth to it. The idea was that when you're younger, it's easier to have liberal ideas.
Sure, of course, that's the oldest thing, because you don't have property that you're trying to keep other people off of.
And that's what he said.
You're not as aware of your mortality, so you're not as fearful of other forces.
He said as soon as you become a homeowner, you become more conservative by nature. And then, of course, he went on to be a loudmouth, raging, right-wing radio host after he was program director of The Score. Hi, Drew.
Well, he was that beforehand, too.
I know.
Oh, God, the stuff that he used to say off the air.
Yeah. Like I said, villainy. Anyway, it's just funny to me that's what I think is happening. I think that when you have achieved a level of success the way that Joe Madden or Phil Jackson have, you do think that you have all the answers. And sometimes when you're out of it and you're not being stimulated by people who will voice opposition or whose journey is different for whatever reason than your journey, you start finding people to go, hey, you know who's smart? Joe Madden's really smart, or Phil Jackson's
really smart.
I'm starting
to like the cut of his jib, right?
You know? Yeah. And then you start finding those folks, and then you lean in a little bit harder into some of the things that you've always wanted to say, and now you have a chance to say it.
1984 for Boys of Summer. That's a 39-year-old. Is that right? 39 years? Did I have that right?
Yes.
That's nearly a 40-year-old song.
Yeah.
When he was pointing out what happened to his generation. Man. All right, High Noon is coming up, and we have to say farewell to someone who's been, for a lot, in an odd way, an important part of this station for a long time.
Oh, I heard a conversation about baseball books on a Cubs broadcast, and then I saw a couple of guys who really know how to hit talking about a baseball book. Share with you next.
Bernstein and Holmes.
I hate being a fan of this team.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
Time for High Noon. First hour of this show, we're just reeling from the announcement that the PGA is merging with LIV Golf. After all that, Tom Monahan muttered a couple things. He went away.
Money.
All the players did all of his work for him. All the players stood out there and said, we're not going to do this because it's wrong, and here's why. And then all of a sudden, the next time you hear from the head of the PGA, it's
money.
Yeah,
money.
Thanks for that. They wrote a check, and nothing to see here. Everything's fine. And now we're all one family, and we're unifying golf. It's a strange, uncomfortable day, and there are a lot of PGA professionals who are really unhappy about the way they found out about it. We also talked to Ian Happ as well.
It's want to hear a couple guys that hit well talk about hitting?
Yeah.
Here's Wade Boggs, and here's Joey Votto.
Beginning of my senior year, I was struggling, and my father checked out The Science of Hitting by Ted Williams. Friday night, said, read it. Let me know what you think on Monday. Read it cover to cover on Monday. He said, what'd you get out of it? And I said, patience and discipline. And from then on, I went on to hit 485 my senior year and got drafted by the Boston Red Sox.
The thing that glows for me out of this book and out of him is just the level of intensity and passion.
He could tell you, and he did in The Science of Hitting, where your elbows should be, where your nose should be pointing.
Your hips start moving. And as your hips start opening up, your hands follow through.
He produced an amazing chart of the strike zone, giving the percentage you would get from each pitch.
Of course, I can strike a ball here. Of course, I can strike a ball off the ground. But really, if you think about it, the best is this rough zone.
Work the count, get a good pitch to hit. When you do, keep the bat on an upward plane.
That's still the best book for a young hitter to get.
He was so far ahead. He was generations ahead.
You walk to the altar of Ted Williams once you really want to invest yourself in hitting.
So Boog and JD were having this conversation on the air. It was great. They were talking about like your favorite baseball books. And it made me think of The Science of Hitting. Now, Science of Hitting isn't my favorite Ted Williams book. My Turn at Bat is my favorite baseball book. And you know who gave it to me? Strangely enough, Dan Hampton.
Really?
Yeah, Hamp was like, I think that you really like this book. Because he knows how much I love baseball. And it was one of those things where he gave me the book, and I think I read it in 2 days. And it was amazing. And The Science of Hitting is the same way. I know that baseball has less time for this now, but I love when we can talk about some of that stuff. And I think JD started talking about like reading books about, I think his was Henry Aaron's book. I Am the Hammer. I think that's what it was, the name of the book.
I mean, a lot of us are of an age where the baseball, Bill James's Baseball Abstract was life-changing.
Right.
And then it's another guy. That's another guy to add to your list.
I know everything. Watch me know all the things about this. There's also a predictor that we could probably add to that list.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Very famously so.
So I just enjoy, like, I know those guys aren't doing it so that I will enjoy stuff, but I really enjoy Boog and JD kind of really digging deep into baseball history and baseball lore. And it made me think, I Had a Hammer is the name of the Hank Aaron book, by the way.
Ted Williams, original launch angle guy.
The people that were fighting against launch angle clearly never read anything that Ted Williams wrote, nor did they see any of his videos that he did on hitting, explaining exactly why.
Uppercut, contact point.
He said that line drive swings are fine, but uppercut swings are better, and that you should be trying to hit the ball to the outfield. Why?
There's fewer people there.
And there's more room. What an amazing bleeping concept.
Astrud Gilberto has died. Who is Astrud? Is it Gilberto? I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing correct. I heard this morning on CBS News they said Astrud Gilberto, so I'm going with their pronunciation.
I've heard that name.
The Brazilian singer and songwriter and entertainer is known very specifically for her performance in one iconic song.
Tall and thin and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah.
Musician Paul Ricci, a family friend, confirmed that she died yesterday. Known as the worldwide voice of Bossa Nova, she has died at age 83.
All right!
Yep. An overnight unexpected superstar in 1964. She knew just enough English to be recruited by the makers of the album Getz Gilberto, the classic Bossa Nova album featuring saxophonist Stan Getz and her then-husband, singer, songwriter, guitarist Joao Gilberto. And when they finished performing the song, Joao said to Stan, "Tomorrow Astrud sing on record. What do you think?" And Stan said, "Great idea." And the rest is history. Now, this I found fascinating. Her style of singing, a light, affectless style, is said to have influenced many, including two artists who were highly successful in mainstream and in different genres. Sade.
Helen.
Well, the band, right, her name is Helen. The group is Sade. And Suzanne Vega.
Oh, I hear both of that. Both of them in there.
Yep. So, I had no idea that she was still alive. I guess I had presumed not. But, remember, people who have listened to this station for a long time know that we brought this song back when the question was asked, why does Dick Juron always have that same facial expression regardless of what's happening in a football game? And the answer was, we decided this is always playing in his headset no matter what. There's no calls, there's no conversations, that at any point in a Bears game, this was playing in Dick Juron's head, for better or for worse.
I think for the better. I mean, what would you rather have, some screaming football coach in your headset or this?
Hey, man.
I'd rather have this.
It's also a Leila Rahimi favorite for when things are going absolutely wrong in this sports city. You just pop this on and
it does. And it makes you feel better.
And the last is an interesting quote from her that I'll leave you with this, that in 2002, she said, "I have been labeled by an occasional frustrated journalist as a recluse. I firmly believe that any artist who becomes famous through their work, be it music, motion pictures, or any other, does not have any moral obligation to satisfy the curiosity of journalists, fans, or any members of the public about their private lives or anything else that does not have any direct reflection on their work. My work, whether perceived as good, bad, or indifferent, speaks for itself."
I dig it.
Good for her. And thanks for the 83. David Dusek of Golf Week has had a busy, busy, busy morning. And if you looked at Justin Thomas's Twitter, he has gone through a time lapse of the number of texts that he has received. He said he was having a pretty easygoing practice morning, and then there were thousands of texts
His phone. I figured that would be the case. That's what we see. Thanks to Mitch, who overdid yet again.
Of course he did. He knew he would.
I told him that I was thinking about, because I haven't like bought a cake or anything, because who buys a cake for themselves? And I was going to get like a piece of cake from Rosebud right here on Randolph, because I was there this weekend and it looked really good. And of course, he went and got two pieces of giant cake.
Yeah, that's enough for a regiment.
Studs, you want some cake?
I'll have a little. Why not?
Rake, you can have. No?
Hell yeah. Yeah. I can have some cake.
All right, good. Then you guys are splitting this other piece of cake.
Happy birthday, Lawrence. Thanks for sharing.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Happy birthday, Mike. Daniel Bernstein.
We're going to talk with David Dusek next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.